The following program is brought to you by We Are Many. To learn more about this program or to find others like it, check out wearemany.org.
This is really exciting. Thanks for coming out, comrades. So basically, I take it if you're in this room, you already have a general sense of like what political moment we're currently in. So I don't need to rehash the horrors of Trump and like all of that. But I do want to stress something really quick, which is basically we are living in a moment where like, yes, we have the horrors of Donald Trump and all of that, but we also have a context in which millions of people want to fight back. They don't want to just say they're against Donald Trump, but they actually want to show it. They want to actually physically resist it. And that's shown in the fact that we have million strong women's marches. We had the March for Science, the People's Climate March, and of course the Brave Airport resistance actions that actually defied Trump's travel ban. So that being said, we are currently existing in this context of movements, and that's kind of what I want to talk about, is trying to start an ISO branch and how to navigate that process while also trying to participate in movements. And then Brandon and Amy are going to talk about their experiences of starting ISO branches. But for me personally, I'm coming out of the Athens, Ohio branch, which was started in the context of heavy movement work already existing, and then people involved in that movement work and activism starting a branch out of that. So basically, first I want to argue that building an ISO branch is not counterposed to movement work, but it's actually very important for the benefit of movement work. They are not two separate things. In fact, having an ISO branch will improve whatever movement work you are participating in. And then I'm going to discuss the relationship between doing the movement work while also trying to build an ISO branch. So, first of all, in order to understand like how and why ISO branches are really beneficial for movement work, you have to understand what exactly the International Socialist Organization is. So it's important to grasp that we are a national organization. You probably got a feel for that by being at this conference and meeting ISO members from all over the country. And we are a revolutionary socialist organization dedicated to not only combating the policies of Donald Trump, but also combating the conditions of capitalism, which generated the possibility for something like Donald Trump to exist. And I would argue that the reason, well, there are three main reasons as to why ISO branches are helpful for movement work. One is that our dedication to educating ourselves and other people in revolutionary theory, which guides our practice, is really vital to what makes us a revolutionary organization. And you're kind of getting a feel for that by just being at the conference this weekend. So part of what our mission is to turn fighters into thinkers and thinkers into fighters. So if you're a better fighter, you're going to be better at thinking about the struggle. And if you're a better thinker about the struggle, you'll be a better fighter as well. And I'm really going to be focusing on like the second part of that formulation, which is the first part, turning fighters into thinkers, because I'm talking about relating to people who are already involved in movement work. So before I get started on that, though, I just want to talk about, I want to stress two things about the ISO and why I think our organization is good for movement work. First is our dedication to the politics of socialism from below, and second is our dedication to the principle of what we call democratic centralism. So the concept of socialism from below is really important to grasp, meaning all it means is basically that we think the emancipation of working class people and oppressed people has to be the act and self-emancipation of the working class and oppressed people themselves. It's not something that's handed down by someone like a benevolent social democratic politician or a benevolent dictatorship. Instead, it's won by the working class and oppressed people themselves. And so something that flows out of that belief is that it really guides how we practice our politics, meaning part of what it means to fight for socialism from below as a revolutionary is to try to unite different struggles whenever possible. So Todd Kreishan puts it really well in his Socialist Worker article recently. That recently came out. It's called Which Train Leads to Socialism. He writes, "The tasks of building connections and uniting all these struggles require political organizations whose central principle is the self-emancipation of the working class." So we actually need these political organizations with this frame of analysis in order to effectively try to connect and build solidarity between different movements, because ultimately that's what's going to make them stronger, and that's how we build a unified working class capable of not only resisting but actually fighting for a socialist future. So, secondly, the principle of democratic centralism. Basically, the way our organization is structured is there's full freedom of debate, freedom of discussion, and then freedom of decision making, in which we vote on our decisions, and then there's full unity of action. So whatever the majority decides, the whole organization gets behind doing that, regardless if you're in the minority of the vote. And the reason for that is, well, one of the reasons for that, at least, is that you can't really test our theories in practice if not everyone is on board with trying the thing that we voted on doing. So by having that centralized effort, we are better able to test what we, you know, debate and put it into practice. An example of this is, I'm going to use, is the recent AT&T worker strike, where AT&T workers went on strike for 3 days. The National Steering Committee of the ISO put out a perspective that said that local branches should try to relate to these strikes wherever and whenever possible. And so in Athens, Ohio, we took that perspective and we were able to, in a centralized way, relate with the striking workers, and we actually made their strike stronger because, like, it was a small retail store. They only had about 5 workers on the picket line at once. Basically, us being there and mobilizing other people to be there, we're able to basically triple or quadruple the size of their picket line solely by the act of mobilizing. Not only that, but we actually were able to teach them lessons about what it means to picket and why we picket in the first place. I mean, there, one anecdote is that workers, they were kind of confused at first as to what the point of the picket line was, and we had to kind of show by example by standing in front of the door and encouraging customers to not come in, and then they realized, like, oh, we are hurting their profits. That's what's going to win us the struggle, by hurting their profits. So, and not only that, on a local level, but on a national level, since all the branches had that perspective, they're able to report to the national organization, and that gives us a feeling or a way to gauge, like, the national scope of the strike, this particular strike action. Allows us to generate lessons and generate an analysis about, like, how we can move forward and build off of that. And that's really only possible on a national level if we are acting in a centralized way. So that is basically my argument as to why ISO branches are beneficial for movement work. I think it was shown in practice there. So now the question I want to go to is, if you're trying to start a branch, what is the relationship between movement work and building an ISO branch? Well, the reason I explain the benefits of having an ISO branch relating to movement work is that we have to think about this in a longer term scheme. So we have to think about, like, when we're considering how we're going to commit our time, our commitment to building the ISO, and we have to realize that building the ISO in the long run is going to be better for building movements. So basically, you got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them. Sometimes you're going to have to pull out of movement work, and if it means that you're sacrificing too much of building your ISO branch and for the sake of, you know, building a movement. And so how do you know when to do that? Well, I'll use an example from Athens, Ohio. A couple years ago, actually, when we just became a branch, we were a branch of 5 members, and we, like I said, we came out of a context of movement work. Basically, there was one ISO member already in Athens, Ohio. He's actually in the audience. His name is Tyler. You can talk to him afterward. But basically, he was the only ISO member in Athens, Ohio at the time. And the way that I met him was actually through joining, when I first got to the Ohio University, which is the college in Athens, Ohio, I immediately joined a group called the Ohio University Student Union. And, you know, we fought for, like, against tuition hikes, against rape culture, and, you know, all the rest. And then when we started an ISO branch, we realized that it was basically the people in the ISO branch were holding together the entire organization of the student union. It had faltered and gotten so weakened by that point in 2015 that there was no one else holding it together besides us. And we realized we were sacrificing, like, developing our own branch qualitatively and in terms of building our branch routines, which Brandon is going to talk about, the importance of building our branch routines, and in terms of educating ourselves, that we decided it was no longer useful for us to, we have to pull out. And, you know, predictably, when we pulled out, the entire organization collapsed. But I think that was the correct move, because the fact that we pulled out and focused on building our branch put us in a position that when the Bernie Sanders moment happened, we were in a position where we could effectively have weekly public meetings where 40 people every week were coming to our meetings to talk about socialism. And now that's why I would argue that we have a branch of 15 people that we're able to bring to this, and we're able to bring around 30 people to the socialism conference this year from Athens, Ohio alone. So that's why you got to know when to pull back. That being said, what do you do, or how do you know when you should be participating in movement work? If you're a lone ISO member, you're isolated you don't have a branch with you, how do you know how to participate in movement work? Well, basically, if there's already a movement happening, and ideally that movement, if it's already has some structure, already has some organization, that's a perfect thing to relate to, and you should relate to that, and you should try to, and you should go into it with the attitude of like, I want to help make this movement stronger, and I want to help build, I want to build trust with the people that I'm going to be organizing with and doing activism with, and that's really the key point too in terms of how you do that movement work, is you have to really try to earn credibility, because people, Tyler likes to say this all the time, people won't care about what you know unless they know that you care in the first place. So yeah, if there's already an organized movement going on, or if at least there's other people who like aren't ISO members that are doing movement work, that's a perfect thing to relate to. So yeah, we go into movements to help them in their own right. We aren't going into movements solely for the purpose of like parasitizing them, right? And like that's even counterintuitive to what I was saying earlier, which is that having an ISO branch will actually in the long run help movements, but we don't want to give the impression that like all we care about is building our organization. Like no, we care about fighting for these reforms in their own right. And it's going to be really important for us as Marxists to go into these movements with our, and be able to contribute to these movements in a qualitative way. And I would argue that when I joined the Ohio University Student Union, before I was an ISO member, organizing with Tyler, for example, he was able to put out arguments, and I really saw the benefit of having like someone who was versed in theory and guiding and helping to lead our struggle. not only that, but I learned by building trust with him, and you know, him earning credibility with us, he was able to invite a lot of people to the socialism conference, you know, many years in a row, where we actually get to meet other ISO members from across the country, and we also get to, you know, politically educate ourselves, which I think is a really, useful tool. So basically, that's what I want to talk about next, is once you earn credibility, and in the process of doing that, you'll be in a better position to invite people to reading groups, like inviting people to read Where We Stand With You, or a Socialist Worker article, or The Meaning of Marxism, and really organizing trips to go to the Socialism Conference. I think the conference is a vital tool that we can use as a way to recruit people, because I mean, you know, you all are here right now, and you see like the benefit of having a conference like this. Not only is it inspiring, but it's really educational, and it gets people really, they want to do something afterward. They don't want to like let this feeling die. And yeah, so I'll leave it at that. The final thing I'll say is just realize if you're an ISO member and you don't have a branch, you aren't alone. You should definitely contact your regional organizer, in the national office, and also I would really recommend reaching out to other comrades that you meet at the conference, and I will offer myself as a resource, and if anyone wants me as a resource, we can exchange information. And yeah, just know that you're not alone. You should really be contacting and really talking with the national office and regional organizer too if you're really trying to start a branch somewhere. So I'll give it to Brandon.
Awesome. Thank you all for coming. This is my first talk at Socialism, so it's really exciting to have a packed room. Ryan gave a great introduction, so I don't need to do much about how the structure of this talk will go, but I will say that the branch of Syracuse has a unique origin story. Every branch does. There's always going to be something that's different about each branch and how it started, but I hope that through the particularities that I hope to explain, it can be informative for helping others starting branches, even though the circumstances can be different in every single way. So the structure of my talk will be a narrative that recounts the emergence of the Syracuse ISO branch, but the key elements of starting a branch will be highlighted. And for me, these elements are recruitment, integration, and development. These are words that are talked about constantly at every branch all over the country. It's not something that I came up with. It's something that we use regularly to discuss how the ISO is both started and strengthened. So it's going to be critical for how I structure my talk. So by explaining how some of the decisions we made about how best to direct the small amount of time and energy at our disposal, I hope that people in the room, especially the ones that raised their hand that said that they don't have a branch, I hope that they feel equipped to start the uncertain journey of building a branch. So let's begin with recruitment, which is going to be how everybody starts. I'm going to split recruitment into two sections. First is going to be practical logistics, and then I'm going to talk a little bit more about social movement relations, extending on what Ryan has said. So as I mentioned, every branch starting experience is going to have huge, huge amounts of variations. But the one thing, and this is the hill that I'm willing to die on, the one thing that I believe is standard and uniform across all branches, everybody has to do this, you have to make a table banner. It's gotta be great. I consider the day that the Syracuse branch started was the day that Katie and I went to an arts and crafts store, bought some red and black fabric, cut it out, pasted it on, and we have this very ragged looking Syracuse International Socialist Organization table banner. And it's really critical because, as Ryan hinted at, this is how the beginning of routine starts. And routines are how recruitment occurs. So if you have at least one person, hopefully, to embark on this journey with you, that is all of the better. You should immediately order some copies of The Socialist Worker. Talking with the national office will give you information on how to do that, the practical steps that are necessary. Once you have The Socialist Worker and you're getting it on a monthly basis, that is the beginning of the routines. You should find a time in your city in which there's going to be, you know, high amount of foot traffic in some spot and begin having regular paper sales. Setting up a table, putting that banner that I mentioned on that table, and just talking to people in public, holding the paper, saying, hey, do you want to talk about socialist politics? Hey, what do you think about this Trump guy? What do you think about Colin Kaepernick? All of these are great ways of just talking with random people. You should print a bunch of flyers that will advertise a regular meeting time, something that you will also need to decide upon. This can happen through any means. You can just be three people meeting in a coffee shop discussing an article of The Socialist Worker each week. But it has to be standard. It has to be something that people can rely upon so that you can advertise it and get people with just the smallest amount of curiosity to walk in and join that conversation with you. So when you're having these regular paper sales, you can hand out a ton of flyers, just indiscriminately giving it to everybody, selling the paper, you know, a little more hesitantly, making sure that you can have a conversation with them, and encourage people, if they are at all interested, to come to the meeting. And in Syracuse, we're a branch campus, so we would set up, you know, on just like the part of the street where all of the students went out to lunch. And so we could really easily access these students, give them all of the information that we had, and then we had our regular meetings on a college campus in a classroom, something that's really critical. So using both social media and physical flyers, it was critical for us expanding our periphery, the group of people who were being exposed to our politics. Since we, you know, had the luxury of classroom meeting places, we made sure we did everything possible to make the meeting seem as professional as possible. So we would set up our Haymarket table, put that banner out, have a printed agenda, putting a Facebook event, making sure that it's as public as possible. There's no reason that everybody that you know, every Facebook friend that you have, should not know that you're in the ISO and that you're holding these meetings. Because we wanted to impress people. We want people that have that small amount of curiosity to walk in and say, oh wow, these people really have their shit together. Like, this is something that is real and they're gonna continue doing this so that they themselves will want to continue doing that. So getting people to come to the meeting is going to be the first significant step towards recruitment. And it's important for the members of the branch to keep track of every person that they meet. And this is a really practical thing to do. Most branches have some type of spreadsheet, Google Sheets, of keeping track of everybody that you meet. And we used, you know, a shared Google spreadsheet to store information about the contact, including their name, details about their interests, like what movement work they were interested in, you know, what issues they really cared about, or what protests we met them at, or how we met them. Once people came to at least a single meeting, we would act confidently on recruitment efforts. Do not be shy. If someone seems interested, we would give them a printed Where We Stand packet, which is absolutely critical as an organizational tool for the recruitment process. We would ask them to read it, sit them down, and discuss each part of it slowly and deliberately, like being very sure that any question that they have about any point is very clearly articulated and answered in a confident way. People are going to be hesitant, you know, they're just going to read all this stuff and say like, oh yeah, this all sounds good. So sometimes you're going to have to like encourage, you know, well, what do you think about this part? To making sure that, you know, they're very serious about this. We, you know, entered we started our branch last August, and so during the January, February, hell days, the organization, the ISO, had the perspective of rapid recruitment. And so we did rush this procedure. We would have these collective groups where we'd meet, five or six people. We'd give them all packets. We'd ask them to join us all at once in a collective reading group, sit them down. Do you agree with this? Yeah. Maybe have two meetings about it. Give them a card, give them an dues checkoff form, and ask them to become a member of the International Socialist Organization and to become a lifelong revolutionary. And it was with that confidence that we had, not being shy about paying dues, not being shy about having routines, about selling the paper. That is what impressed people. It's not something that you should hide behind or be afraid of saying. It's something that you should very confidently tell them so that they know what they're getting into and they're going to be realistic about what it means. So from January to February of 2017, we recruited 16 new members, with no doubt help from the political moment, but also because of our ability to grab hold of that and through these tools recruit these people. So those are just some of the practical ways in which the beginning of recruitment efforts can happen. Routines, reading groups on the Where We Stand packet, and having regular meetings. All things that can easily happen with, 1 to 2, 3 to 4 members or people who are interested. So it's something that is very realistic and anyone in this room can get started. So now I'm going to talk about relating to social movement activity, but on a more practical basis. Ryan did a great job of the theoretical side of knowing when to prioritize branch building, when to prioritize movement building work. But there's something that can happen even if you're in a stage of just focusing on building the branch. And it's because social movement activity is dialectically related to building the ISO. If you're new to activism, you will no doubt learn that establishing networks with other local activists is critical for any type of collective action. And this isn't like an ISO perspective, this is just all activism. So I made the deliberate effort to add every activist I met on Facebook, expanding my network so that I could be exposed to every event that was happening in town. Even if I couldn't go to all of it, I wanted to know about it so that I could talk to people about what's going on in the city and have, a lay of the land. Understanding the terrain that you're working with is critical to being able to adapt to the situations. By getting into the circles, whether by digital means or just old-fashioned networking, it's going to be an extremely valuable resource. Getting to know the leaders of the community as well as getting the leaders to know you expands the periphery of the ISO branch. So it might seem like a good idea to focus your recruitment efforts on people in the local activist community, but I actually want to explicitly recommend against this. You should not waste your time with people who already have their commitments, because that's what it is. They're committed to an organization already. Like in Syracuse, there's the Syracuse Peace Council, there's the Green Party. People were in these, and these were some of the best activists. And now are the people, of course, that I want to join the ISO. Like, they would be great at helping us build this on a national level. But that's not going to be a really practical mindset, because you're acting as a parasite, saying, I have the answers, you don't, you should join our organization, we're better. That's not a good idea. So we didn't waste our time attending their meetings or trying to recruit their members, but we still wanted to know everything about what they were doing. Because once we did meet people through the recruitment efforts, through the routines, and through the branch meetings, we were then able to tell them about other stuff that's happening in the town. We were able to act as a nodal point for the activist community, and that is impressive. If you know what's happening, if you can say, hey, there's this Black Lives Matter protest happening, do you want to come with us? That is impressive. That's like, they'll come to you as a resource for getting involved into activism, and that will help you recruit them, because you are, a channel for that to happen. Proving to potential recruits that you are more than a reading group makes membership more likely. Once our branch reached enough members, we were able to mobilize these activist networks for the rallies that we began to organize, for example, in the Sanctuary Campus movement. So all of the work that you put into that early on will come back in the best way, because you already have all of these networks, and anytime you want to have a demonstration, these people are going to be willing to help you. So it's really critical. So networking with activists is useful for recruitment, but not through the direct means of recruiting those activists, but for impressing the people that are in your periphery with your knowledge of the activist community. So these are great ways of starting the recruitment process, which is definitively the first step. The next is integration. So once you have a few members or a few solid contacts that are interested in joining the ISO, it is critical to begin the task of integration. This should happen even before they've signed the card. All of these are really happening all at the same time. But I would define the process of integration as promoting the collective branch building experience. Every member should feel that this is their branch and that they are responsible for its growth and its success. It's not the BC that's going to take care of all of this stuff and we're just going to help out in what we can. This is our branch and I want to make sure that it is successful. So in Syracuse, we would encourage suggestions for meetings and topics and readings. The more that people felt that there was a democratic control, the more they could, you know, feel that their branch as collectively owned. At meetings, we would ask contacts and members to give leads on designated topics. And as the responsibility for every task of the branch grows, so too did the collective investment that everyone placed in it. Responsibility isn't a bad thing. Asking people to do things for you is not a bad thing. It's something that's going to make them feel better about themselves, that they are taking on these serious tasks, that they can engage and really help out this organization and help it grow, make it feel like material and physical. And so democratic principles, as Ryan excellently explained, are of course central to all activities of the ISO, but we should think about how democracy has an effect of making this shared responsibility a feeling that helps with integration, helps people feel responsible for their branch. The faster that recruits feel comfortable with taking up routine tasks like organizing paper sales, the faster they will integrate themselves into the branch. So, like the political moment that Ryan introduced, we're in it. Since Syracuse was within driving range of Washington, D.C., we loaded up every car we could spare with people interested in attending the inauguration protests, and that was something, you know, geographically that we were very privileged in. The members at this time didn't control every part of this process. Instead, we asked the contacts interested in attending to help us with the logistical effort it would take. This included just really simple things: driving, determining departure times, splitting up the costs, researching transit metro options, and reading the ISO notes to establish a plan of action. Everyone who involved themselves was filled with a sense of pride because of the enormous task we accomplished. We transported 17 people from a different part of the country, 6 hours away, to join the 400,000 protesters in DC. When we joined the massive ISO contingent of over 200 people at the protest, it gave everyone a sense of being a part of a professional organization that had a clear strategy and plan of action, that shared responsibility. The pride that they felt for contributing to that massive success translated into an enthusiasm for making it possible again in the future. Not only possible, but more frequent. And that's exactly what happened. Attending protests with new members and contacts immediately justifies the priority of building the ISO, exactly how Ryan explains. Once we got back, 5 contacts joined immediately and were eager to take part in the practical activity of organizing a branch. We immediately planned a public talk on the subject of building the left and fighting the right. Our new members eagerly took up the necessary task of publicity. One of the natural leaders that we recruited took charge of designing a poster and delegating contacts to put up flyers all over campus. Everyone understood the importance of this work, and when 60 people showed up to our public meeting, everyone saw the products of their labor. They did this, not us, it was all of us. The talk was a huge success for expanding our periphery and having new people read the Where We Stand packet. We organized another collective reading group right after that, and after everyone read through and discussed each point in detail, we asked them to join. All 5 of them joined. From this effort, we recruited another 5 members. Literally the day after this reading group, we organized another caravan to attend a Planned Parenthood protest in Rochester. Utilizing the same shared responsibility strategy, a similar effect was achieved. We proved to our contacts and new members how serious we are about social movement activity and demonstrated the importance of organized groups for effectively combating right-wing attacks. And it was wonderful. So finally, development. The final part of the branch building experience is membership development. There is no simple way to achieve this, and honestly, I can't say what the right decisions are for guaranteeing the members become cadre, because I'm still a developing member myself. The most important aspect for this process, and really the hardest, is convincing new members the importance of reading. It's not sexy, as many people have been saying. But in Syracuse, we really have a lot and continue to have a lot of difficulty with this, so I can't give you all the right answers. Most students really refuse to do readings for their own classes. I know, I'm a teacher, they literally never read. So it's really hard to convince them to do an even more reading for something that they're not being graded on. At least, not that they know. But, you know, and most people in the United States are really, they find the concept of reading for political education entirely alien, because we're conditioned only to read either for leisure or the assigned readings of school. But acquiring the knowledge of revolutionary history and theory is critical for articulating our politics and convincing people to join our socialist project. The more we read, the better we get at talking about the necessity of abolishing capitalism. The more on our branch routines, at paper sales, we can persuade people to join the project that we are engaged in. So every member must read Paul Diamato's The Meaning of Marxism, and this should happen through a collective reading group discussion. These reading groups, which we had entirely separate from our meetings, gave us practice in the articulation of Marxist politics. Don't study collective action alone. Every member needs to be one that that reading is critical for the development of membership, and this is a political argument that must be made. Sometimes people are going to say, oh, I don't have time. That's a political answer, that they are not prioritizing it for X amount of reasons. And so it is absolutely essential that you think of this as a task of persuasion. I must persuade this person to believe that reading is central to making stronger political organizations. So and you have to adapt, because there are different circumstances. So since a lot of our membership are students that leave Syracuse during these times, during like winter and summer, we used Google Hangouts for a digital discussion. That way we could assign reading each week and then have a digital group and discuss it. And this was extremely convenient for people, and we were able in the winter and summer periods to have like, you know, 5 or 6 people finish Meaning of Marxism, which was critical. So sometimes it is political, and sometimes it's actually just the logistical, you know, convenience that you can make for your members. Do everything you can to make people read. It's really important. So once the branch gets large enough, each branch should establish a branch committee, or BC. I'm not going to go into detail about what this entails. The ISO rules and procedures document contains the necessary guidelines and political principles to guide BC action. But it's absolutely critical that the most natural and organic leaders of your new branch be given a position within the BC. The experience of providing political and intellectual leadership for the branch will heavily develop these new members. It's going to happen so rapidly. I joined in the Austin branch in Texas in 2015. I was the worst comrade. I would never read, never do anything. And then I get to Syracuse and I'm thrust into all of this action, and I become a member of the branch committee, and it rapidly made me develop and made everything more serious. So it's practical, because you need a branch committee, you need to have intellectual leadership, but it's also the effect of training people. So you should actively think like who would best benefit from a position and ask them to join the BC. So yeah, that's recruitment, integration, and development. Like I said, all of these things should be happening simultaneously. You shouldn't wait until someone has joined to ask them to join you on the paper sale. You should be immediately doing all of these things, making sure they're reading, making sure they're, you know, helping out with the paper sale, making sure that they care about the branch. So social movement activity is on the rise across the nation. People are quickly realizing the impossibility of reform through traditional avenues of politics. We are presented with an opportunity to shape the characteristics of activism by providing a democratic organ for decision making. The past year presented an abundance of opportunity for activism, and our branch was able to grab hold and direct campus activism towards more radical positions. Our ability to recruit new people was premised on our ability to impress activists with tactical leadership and persuasive articulations of our politics. From the defense of Planned Parenthood protest, to Planned Parenthood, to the International Women's Day, the Syracuse ISO quickly became a focal point on campus for a source of activism. The rapid growth of our branch has been an amazing experience that has no doubt been aided by, you know, the current moment, but like I said, grabbing hold of it is an intentional and deliberate decision that you must make. The crisis of capitalism is not going to make the revolution. It is going to be our ability to recognize what conditions are created and how we can direct them through subjective decisions. And the final lesson that I want to impress on everyone interested in starting a branch is going to be the high frequency of mistakes. The most important lesson of democratic centralism and Leninism is that your branch building skills are only learned through the practical activity of socialist politics. This means you're going to make a lot of mistakes. You're going to forget to invite people, you may order too many copies of Socialist Worker, or you may invite a contact, you know, to the wrong meeting time. They show up and they're like, what the hell, where are you? This is all something that's happened. So. And don't even get me started about getting people here to socialism, being the revolutionary travel agent. It was a nightmare. But lots of mistakes were made in this past year, and we're going to continue to fuck up. But honestly, if we are honest in our assessments, because we know that even with an unorganized mess, we are all committed to the lifelong revolutionary project, we're going to be that much stronger. We're going to learn from our mistakes, and we're going to build stronger branches in order to continue the fight. Thank you.
So I want to begin by echoing some of the points that Ryan and Brandon both made, that this past year we've seen an enormous will to resist, born of the prolonged misery from capitalism's systemic crises and rising to historic levels of participation in the wake of Trump's election. The experiences people are having within struggle are bringing many of them to radical conclusions. Rising numbers of people identify capitalism as being at the root of the oppression and exploitation they want to fight, and see socialism as a more just way to organize society. People are learning that they themselves must play an active role in struggle, as demonstrated by the millions who participated in the Women's March around the world, and the thousands who poured into airports with a knee-jerk reaction of solidarity when Trump's first Muslim ban went into effect. Starting a branch of the ISO in a time with this level of openness to socialist politics presents many opportunities, but it does present some serious challenges as well. How do you keep up with the necessary but difficult and long-term task of organization building when there are so many urgent problems that need a response now, especially when you're in a city where the type of organization we need to build hasn't been built yet? There are no shortage of ways to be politically active in this moment, no shortage of organizations to join, meetings to attend, protests to organize, letters to write, petitions to circulate. It can be easy to get swept away in the ups and downs of the political moment, but building a branch of the ISO is an important priority to keep at the forefront of your organizing. And so I hope to provide some insight on how to do that and why it's important from my experience in the Portland, Maine branch. So, Portland, Maine became an official branch of 5 members last year, and since then we've grown to a branch of around 20 members. But before we were a branch, and even before we were a twig, we were a discussion group that met twice a month to talk about articles from the print edition of Socialist Worker, which is this paper right here. There are people selling them all over conference. If you're in this session, you should definitely go home with a nice fat stack of them. It was the organizational routines and the political education of the Socialist Worker discussion group that laid the foundation for our branch's growth to the point that we're at now. The discussion group was started by another comrade, Owen, who's actually in the room now, who was a member with the CUNY branch for 4 years before moving back to Maine in 2011, at which point he was the only ISO member in the state. He started the discussion group with a small group of contacts that he had made by participating in movement work from 2012 to 2014. And Owen gave a great talk about his experience at last year's conference, which has the same title as this one, and it's worth checking out on We Are Many. The Socialist Worker Reading Group participants came from Maine's Marriage Equality Campaign, Occupy Maine, the Green Party, and a variety of other short-lived political groups and projects. And I was one of those contacts, and the discussion group was my first point of entry into the ISO. Myself and the other contacts came to the discussion group with a diversity of political perspectives, but there were a few things that we had in common. We were all serious about changing the world and had already dedicated several years of our lives to organizing in some way, shape, or form. We had all run into challenges in our organizing and were eager for a place to talk them through. And while many of us had genuine frustrations with things like the limitations of electoral work, nonprofits, or independent political groups that would pop up around a particular issue only to dissolve as the energy faded, we also had a genuine curiosity about what led to those challenges and how to overcome them. So we were perfect contacts. Most of us were among the around 51% of millennials who now say that they're against capitalism. But we were living and working in a city that's so dominated by liberal organizations that maybe talk left, but were actually incapable of offering any meaningful challenge to that system. The Maine Democratic Party and its various affinity groups employ a slew of paid organizers and offer thousands of volunteer opportunities throughout the year. The nonprofit sector, which attracts many people hungry for change, employs more Mainers than any other sector. In fact, 1 out of 6 people in Maine work for a nonprofit. And this has an impact kind of on like the ideological, like, you know, when you're in the political realm, like, what's possible? What are the politics that are possible in this type of an environment? So this landscape meant people that were newly radicalizing to the left were kind of in this contradictory position, with our consciousness maybe having risen beyond the politics of the most visible organizing opportunities. In general, I saw people, you know, when they ran into this, follow one of 3 paths. They would either join with the liberal establishment, conceding, I know it's crooked, but it's the only game in town. It's a little American Gods reference for Neil Gaiman fans out there. Or maybe pull ultra-left, denouncing everything and building nothing, or just drop out of organizing entirely. So I think one of the reasons that we had success in building a branch just out of a newspaper discussion group was because it contained the potential of an alternative to those three dead-end paths, which is a point that I'm going to come back to in a couple minutes. So after each meeting of the discussion group, Owen would follow up with the most engaged participants. He'd ask us how we thought the discussion went, what political questions we'd been mulling over since the discussion, and what we thought it would be important to talk about next time. He'd also ask us to take on organizing tasks for the next study group, like preparing article presentations and inviting others to attend. This follow-up in between meetings was crucial for winning contacts to taking on a more active role in organizing the discussion group. And in these conversations, we were engaging in a regular practice of planning, implementation, and assessment. We were learning to think and organize like Marxists. As more people got the hang of basic routines that went into organizing each meeting, it built our capacity to scale up from meeting just twice a month to once a week. From there, we were able to expand the content of the meetings beyond just discussing Socialist Worker. We built up a regular rotation of the three types of branch meetings that are outlined in the Members Toolkit, which is this little pamphlet right here, and Frankie has some that you can pick up. And so those three types of meetings are education meetings, organizing meetings, and public meetings. We dedicated one meeting a month to the education meeting, and we started by deciding to read Meaning of Marxism by Paul D'Amato together, which is available over in the Haymarket Book Room. In our organizing meetings, we were able to take on larger projects to expand our audience and to deepen our politics. We mostly use this type of meeting for planning and assessing our public meetings, which we aim to put on once a month. Like most new branches, we didn't have a ton of cadre when we were first starting out, so we coordinated with nearby branches to bring speakers up to Maine, with our group taking on the work of organizing, promoting, and chairing the meetings. Regular organizing meetings also gave us the space to collectively plan a trip to the Regional Marxism Day School in the fall, and eventually to this conference, to Socialism Conference in the summer. And like the other speakers have said, these events are absolutely crucial for winning long-term contacts for joining the ISO, as they provide an invaluable level of political depth, as well as a glimpse at what our little reading group could grow into. So why start there? Why start with the Socialist Worker Reading Group? It may seem like small potatoes in this political moment, but I do think that there are practical as well as political reasons that make it an effective place to begin. First is a matter of capacity. If you're truly starting from scratch, there's really only so much you can accomplish. Breaking down the task of founding a branch into a more manageable, though still not always easy, project of getting a few people together on a regular basis to talk politics is plenty of work for one or two people, in my opinion. Starting with Socialist Worker also got us off on a good footing politically. The paper is an approachable, accessible resource that consistently projects the politics of Marxism and the ISO, giving readers a good sense of our organization's perspectives. Once we were won to those political perspectives through debate, we were much more motivated to dive into the work of organizing. The discussion group also established a strong organizational foundation. It got us in the habit of reading and talking about every issue of the paper. This routine set us up well to build other core branch routines, like confidently arguing our politics with friends, coworkers, and contacts, organizing paper sales, organizing public meetings, and eventually speaking at them ourselves. So as it's been said many times at this conference, we're in a moment where massive numbers of people are attempting to change the world. And where do they have to go to make sense of this gut-wrenching process? Betsy DeVos's public education system? Comrade Lenin's dank meme stash? So, Portland Socialist Worker Discussion Group and the branch meetings that it grew into, there was always a place for people to make sense of the world in order to change it, to understand their practical day-to-day organizational and political questions in relation to a broader scope through the lens of Marxism, contextualized by the history of struggle with the deeper perspective that collective study and debate can bring. In follow-up conversations in between our discussion groups, Owen would often ask a short but enormous question. What do you think it will take for us to change the world? Whenever I had to answer that question, I found myself defending my perspective on how change happens, who I thought were the key players, what I thought were the key tactics, who I considered my enemies and my allies in that fight. I lost a lot of those debates. Some of those ideas were wrong at the time. But it was a catalyst for debate that ultimately won me over to the need for revolutionary socialist organization and that I should play a role in building it. Ooh, there we go. What do you think it will take for us to change the world? This is a question that has only become more alive in the past year, as the thousands of people who have been drawn into activism are undoubtedly running into the same sorts of political challenges and contradictions that brought our discussion group together 3 years ago. The need for space to talk through these questions, or to talk through the questions that these experiences will raise, is crucial as ever. And addressing this need isn't simply about providing catharsis to people struggling through political questions, although that is always nice. It relates to the dynamic that I raised earlier, the dead-end political paths that people take in the absence of a strong left alternative. What conclusions will the thousands of people mobilized in the hashtag resistance draw when the candidate that they work so hard to get elected fails to fulfill their campaign promises? Or after they pour into the streets in the next wave of mass protest, feeling like another world is not only possible but just on the horizon, only to have that feeling subside as the crowd disperses and the wave of protest ebbs. These experiences can lead people from hope to despair, reinforcing ruling class ideas that keep our side down, that deep systemic change is impossible, that working class people are too stupid, backward, or selfish to work together for their own interest. These ideas impact the way that people organize, and in the absence of organization to argue against them, we leave the door wide open for them to take up the neutered politics of liberalism or the anti-solidaristic politics of ultra-leftism. In turn, this creates fertile ground for the insidious forces of the far right to grow as well. We can't rebuild a strong, vibrant left alone, but starting a branch in your city is a good place to begin. In Portland, Maine, starting with a socialist worker discussion group formed the foundation upon which we were able to build a branch, which lays the foundation in the larger task ahead of creating a serious alternative to these other paths. And I'll just close out with a report back, which was written in November of last year, and it's coming from one of the original contacts who came around in 2014. So, quote, "I decided I had to do something today. So I went to the Solidarity with Standing Rock action at Monument Square with a sign that said we need a system based on human need, socialism, not capitalism. The action started with a small group of maybe 50 people holding signs in front of the library for oncoming traffic, and students led chants such as water is life and another world is possible, and what do we want? Clean water. When do we want it? Now. If we don't get it, shut it down. Sooner or later, a couple of hundred people gathered. There was chanting and brief speeches by students, but disorganized. I was moved to do an Occupy-style mic check. After only one try, many of the crowd did the mic check back. A student organizer gave me the megaphone, and I made an unplanned speech about socialism and the need to build a world based on human need instead of profit. I mentioned the name of our organization and the fact that we believe we need an independently organized left-wing organization to take on the profit-based system of the Republicans and Democrats, a multi-gendered, multi-racial, working-class movement. Many people cheered, and several people came to talk to me afterwards. These are interesting times. A lot of things to fear, but thousands of people are ready to act and organize. It's times like these that I think that many people are forced to find their voices. I have trouble even bringing myself to do call and response chants, answering the phone, even when I know the caller provokes my anxiety. I never saw myself as someone who would make a speech in front of hundreds of strangers, let alone an unplanned one. I hope this means that many more people are finding their voices. What will it take to change the world? A lot more moments like that, but in a world that constantly instructs working class people to swallow their anger and to lower their voices, building that confidence to fight back at the scale necessary to win requires organization where ordinary people can practice using and sharpening their voices, and that's something we'll have to build from the ground up. So grab a paper, read it, sell it, discuss it, and build with it.
The preceding program was a production of WeAreMany.org. a website dedicated to publishing radical and activist media that promotes a better understanding of today's world while also putting forward a vision for a better future. We Are Many is a project of the Center for Economic Research and Social Change. To learn more about this program or to find others like it, check out wearemany.org.